All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fucksters, what the fuckaholics, what the fuckadelics, what the fuckleberry fins? Welcome. I am Mark Maron. This is WTF. Thank you for joining me. Some of you may be new to the show. Welcome. We do have quite a few new listeners because of an interview I did last week. Today on the show, as promised, the week following the presidential podcast, Rich Voss. Rich Voss and I go way back. And Rich Voss is a comedian and a very decent man. And I enjoyed this conversation with him a great deal, and I'm happy to share it with you. Since I last talked to you, I did the Brooklyn Opera House, which was spectacular and amazing and a real high point for me performance-wise. And then I went out to Huntington, Long Island, also great. They gave me a brick. The guys at the Paramount in Huntington are very proud of their venue, and it's a fine venue to do comedy in, a big venue, an old venue, a gutted old movie theater, which is pretty amazing. Hold on, let me get the brick. Thank you for playing the Paramount Come Back Again Soon on parchment, tied to a brick that on one side etched in it. I mean, they must get this done at like a place that makes gravestones or something, because etched in the rock, in the brick, in the actual brick, Mark Maron, June 27, 2015, on the other side, the Paramount, Huntington, New York. They're very proud of their venue because it's a renovated venue and it's beautiful. And there's all this old detail to it. It's pretty astounding venue. And this apparently was a brick that was part of the venue. This is a brick. Now, I carry on luggage. And I really didn't know where, you know, I got to be honest with you and with the people at the Paramount, that I didn't know if this was going to end up in the garbage, because I like to carry on. And this is something people should consider when they bring stuff to shows for me. You know, I can handle a record or two, but if you're going to bring a large painting, God, it sounds so, I'm just mailing its best. But so I had this brick, but I'm like, I'm going to risk it. I'm going to take it. I'm going to try to carry it on. Like, I know in the old days, a brick is a weapon, and probably is a weapon now. Not, it's sort of old school. It's more of a weapon for destroying windows, throwing a brick through a window, taking a brick and hitting a guy over the head with a brick. Not as easy. It's weighty. But I didn't know if it was on the list of dangerous shit. So I just went ahead through. I go through pre-check, and then I put it through the scanner, and they're like, you gotta look in the bag. And I'm like, here we go. My commemorative brick is going to be in the garbage. And this is a horrible thing about having your name etched in something, or your name written in things, or something made out to you or for you. If you throw it away, it'll find its way back to you, or perhaps it'll hurt the feelings of someone who gave it to you, and I don't want to do that. I did not want to throw away the brick. The TSA guy, you know, this dude, like a stout dude, little burly dude, takes my bag, and I'm like, there's a brick in there. He's like, what? I'm like, there's a brick. He's like, a brick? Like a brick? I'm like, yeah, it's a brick with my name on it. Really? I'm like, yeah, it's a brick. He opens the bag and I take it out and I show him. It's like, I don't know. What do you think? He's like, I know who you are. And I'm like, so what, you gonna, can I take the brick? He's like, yeah, take the brick and, you know, keep working, keep going, man. You're gonna be something. He said it to me. Okay, thank you for letting me keep my brick and being supportive. So I have my brick. Thank you, Paramount, for the brick. And I was in Red Bank, New Jersey. My old man showed up in Red Bank, and I know some of you know the stuff with me and my old man, you know, the in and out of it, the ups and downs, more like. But we've been all right, but I had to make some time for the old man, not knowing where the old man would be frequency-wise. And he sounded good on the phone, you know, he's retired and he's wandering. I don't know, it's hard to be upbeat and miserable, but he does it, and maybe that's where I get it, I don't know. But we go out to dinner at this place, Gaetano's, right there in Red Bank, because I have a part-time assistant, Frank. His dad owns that joint and said, go by there. I got to fucking tell you, man, you can't get Italian food anywhere like you can in like the East Coast, New Jersey, New York. I mean, there's just places. It's just places where it's fucking amazing. I don't know if it's the water or what, but God damn it, it was good. Chicago, too. I'll give Chicago. But that's it. Where the immigrant population of Italians has lived for centuries and generations is where you find the good Italian food. And also, I think New York water has something to do with it. But anyway, I'm not going to talk about food. I'm talking about my father. So I didn't know where he was at. So me and my dad sit down at this restaurant. He picked me up at the train station. And I can usually tell where my father's at mentally and emotionally from about 50 feet away. Just by his posture, the aura
of his energy. I can feel it because I know the guy's my dad. So I can feel the suction of his sadness from about 50 feet. I could feel the sort of non-threatening middle frequency where he's just sort of like neither here nor there. And I can feel the mania from his posture. I can feel all that because he's my dad. I can feel it 50 feet away. And I see him and I'm registering a little above just medium. A little above medium. We're not no darkness. And I'm like, great, this will work out. But still, overcompensate. Everything's going great. Don't let him take a brick out of your wall. Don't let him take a commemorative emotional brick out of the fortress I have constructed for myself to live a relatively healthy life. So we exchange pleasantries and we go sit down to dinner. And I order some food and I look at him. I go, so how you doing? And my father looks at me and goes, good. Fucking sick of everything. I've had it with everything, but I'm good. I'm good, but I've had it. I tell you, I've had it with everything. And that's it, man. That's it in a nutshell. That's what I come from. Everything's great, but fuck, I've had it. Is that a way of communicating? Is that the yin and yang? I don't know, but that's what happened. That's where it was. And he came to the show, and I think despite himself, I think there's a slight difference. You either have parents that are proud of you, or you have parents that are impressed by you. I think I have the impressed kind. My mom seems to tip into pride a bit emotionally. My father's just impressed, which I think is tentative. I think, you know, he's impressed, but there's still room to fail for you. More tour dates. There's a couple more coming up. Portland is sold out for the weekend after next. But Colorado, I'll be at the Boulder Theater on July 24th, and I'll be at the Paramount Theater in Denver on July 25th. So come if you can. I know I've got people there. I just don't know if they know what's happening. No matter what I do, the day after I do it, people are always like, I didn't know you were coming. I don't know what I have to do. I've said it on my show over and over again. I tweeted. I did everything I could. Do you want me to come over? So I had to do some organizing because the president came and I moved everything out of the garage, everything that was on the floor. And a lot of that stuff was just piles and stacks of shit that I have not gone through. And my filing is horrible. You know, I've got just papers and stacks and I save everything. And I today spent some time with Frank, my new guy, and we just went through the filing. And it's unfucking believable what I save and what is emotional to me. Like, I'm going through these files, I'm throwing shit away. I don't have to save everything, like pay stubs from gigs and all the weird detective work I had to do around my identity theft. I found the three or four letters that were sent to me by the patent troll harassing me to give them money. And I'm like, I got to do something with this. That thing is defeated. It's, you know, there was a victory to it. And there's just tons of other papers. I just don't need every doctor visit I ever did and the results of every doctor thing I ever had. And they're paying, it's sort of like just a history of panic and blood tests. I mean, I found I used to get those calendars. I found one from 1991, like those monthly calendars that you write your shit in, because that's the way I could see it back then. And I found an address book that must be from around that time, like 90, 91. And it's just bizarre. I don't know if you have this shit, but there's a reason that you should keep it, because if you just look at who your friends were and who you were talking to, it's sort of fucking fascinating. Right there on the first page, David Tell's number, 25 years ago, Craig Anton, who I'm still in touch with. Bizarre. My grandmother, his address, that's sad. Brett Butler, Steve Brill, these people that I still talk to, Greg Barrett, Dave Becky, my old manager. It's just, it's amazing how many people are still in my life. Holy geez, look at that travel. Hilarious. Hilarious. Maybe you should beat that. I don't know. I doubt it. But this was this weird travel agency back before the TSA where you'd buy these tickets for almost nothing because they had some sort of scam going with other people's, you know, frequent flyer points or whatever. And you'd meet a dude at an airport where he'd give you a ticket. And if you tried to change the ticket, you were in a world of shit. It was just this scam that Barry Katz had set me up with. Of course, Chuck Farnham. What happened to that guy? Bob Guccione Jr. Oh, yeah. I went to dinner at his house once. Frank Gannon used to book the Tonight Show. This is bizarre, man. Janet, oh my God, I remember her. I had sex with her in Memphis, I think. Anyways, it's just sort of fascinating to see who my friends were. Oh, my first girlfriend's in here. This is, it's just, Like, this is before Facebook. I don't know where a lot of these people, John Stewart. Wow. John Stewart's phone number is in here from back in the day. The Nose magazine. Trippy. Patton Oswalt. Oh, so this must be like 92. Anyways, friends. Jonathan Rosenfeld. That was a therapist I had in San Francisco. So yeah, so this must be from like 92, 93. Jonathan Rosenfeld. He was the guy that said to me, there's no such thing as boredom, only fear. John Stewart. I wonder if that number is still good. Should give him a call. I should talk to him. I guess it's on me, isn't it? Anyways, it's just weird that I saved all this shit, and you can sort of track your memories if you can access them of people and places you've been if you hold on to these weird little artifacts. Yeah, that's right. 1991. I was making my living doing the Taunton Regency, which was a good gig. It was a hotel gig in a conference room. Probably made $400. And last week, I interviewed the president of the United States of America, Barack Obama. I'll tell you one thing I came away from the president with is that nicotine is an ongoing fucking nightmare. And I'm not saying I'm chipping on cigarettes, but I'm chipping. All right. And if you don't know what chipping is, get hip to the old lingo from back in the day. I'm chipping a little bit and I'm sorry. All right. Let's talk to Rich Voss.
I got to tell you this.
What?
You achieved something that I dream of. I have a hotel by the airport.
Yeah.
You have a fucking billboard. It's so fucking big. It's so big that it's probably the most exciting. One of the most exciting things you could have as a comic is, I mean, the fucking whole concept of a billboard stinks. I mean, you come out of the balls, but the fact it's fucking ridiculous. I don't know who picked that. I like to find them. But
it's colorful though.
It's colorful. So is a Benetton ad. Yeah. So, but the fact it's probably as big as any big billboard you can get.
I've only seen one of them, and I got to be honest with you, I really wanted those. Like I thought that at least in this town, you know, in LA, yeah, can I get a couple billboards? It's the third season. You know, I said to IFC, it's like, you know, and they're like, it's not the most effective way to spend ad money. I'm like, who cares? It's LA. Yes. I'd like to people to think I have a real television show.
I had a billboard for a week in Vegas, for a week.
Yeah.
But any fucking Bodak could have got that billboard because I was just working at the Palms.
Yeah.
You know, so I had a real billboard, not the club one. Yeah. It was one on the street.
Right.
Okay. And it was, I took pictures of it. But in life, you know, you work so hard, and little things like a billboard,
yeah,
is one of the payoffs.
It's weird. It is.
It's a fucking payoff. Okay. Why should fucking Cameron Diaz have a billboard and not Mark
Maron? Shitty movie.
Yes. For fucking something that's going to go straight from the theater into the fucking...
I agree with you, but there's part of me that knows, like, well, anyone can get a billboard. You just got to get someone to pay for it. But yes. But the truth is, like, I agree with you. It may be petty. It may be small-minded. But to me, a billboard was a big deal. It was a big deal to me.
I think Patrice, one of the reasons he didn't re-up with VH1 or whatever network was because they wouldn't give him a billboard in Times Square.
Yeah.
And he said, look, I want a billboard in Times Square.
Yeah.
Look, this is the story of my life. I was working the MGM Grand at Brad Garrett's
room. When was this? Oh, recently?
I don't know, a couple of months ago. Whatever. It's a good room for a comedy room in Vegas. Yeah. It's a good room.
So you were headlining?
Yeah. What, really? No, I was fucking middling. I was middling for a fucking juggling Jack Swerzy. Okay. I was fucking headlining.
Really? Look at that fucking face. Really?
30 years and I just worked my way to middle.
I'm just trying to set you up. I'm just trying to make sure everyone knows you. My listeners are new to Rich Voss. I want them to know.
So I'm working there and the billboard, you know, when they flash their work in there, it's the whole side of the building. I mean, it's probably 25 stories high.
Oh. 20,
I got a picture of it. It's remarkable.
It's a lot of Rich.
That's a lot. Okay. And
I didn't know you could make insecurity that big.
Let me tell you something. The drool on the billboard that came out of my mouth looked like fucking buckets of water. Okay. Because I'm a slobbering Jew bag.
Yeah.
So I'm going, I can't feel any better. You know, yeah, I'm working
yeah.
Vegas.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, look, it's a good comedy room
yeah,
out
yeah.
of all the comedy rooms. Yeah. It's not a theater. I'm not, right. it's not, but I'm headlining and I'm in a good mood. Then, and this happens, this is my third time it happened.
Yeah.
My fucking manager mm-hmm. calls me on Friday.
Right.
On Friday before the Friday and the weekend show.
Yeah.
Oh, your pilot wasn't picked up. Your pilot. Really? You couldn't wait to Monday. You couldn't wait to Monday when I
which
got
which pilot
home.
Was that?
Bonnie and I did one for True TV. We got a couple going.
Bonnie
now.
McFarlane. I want to make sure everyone knows.
Yeah that's my wife. But we, you
Jesus,
know,
what the hell? The why the fuck she marry you?
Well, because I'm fucking. First of all, I'm a genius. That's one. Second of all, I mean that goes without saying. I don't fail.
You're a okay? sweet guy.
Okay, and I don't know. It's so weird when we started dating. The first time I met her, and I've told this, I was at the Comedy Cellar. I'm on Last Comic Standing, the first season, the good season.
What's the age difference?
Oh God.
What? Was that a reasonable question?
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess it is. Look,
I'm a failure at relationships.
Yeah, but,
failure.
But you look great. You're slim.
You look great. You're no. older than me, right?
Probably, yeah.
How old are you?
How old am I?
Yeah.
Don't you hate when people answer a question with a question?
Well, you've done.
How old am I? Next month, I'll be 58.
Really?
Yeah.
You look great.
Thank you.
I'm 51. 51.
Yeah, but you look good, you know. But, you're fucking,
you look better than me. You've got that sort of rugged Jew skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of dark a little bit.
I play a lot of golf, though. That's why I get dark. Well, I am dark. I have an olive skin base from when I was a kid.
Yeah, from being that kind of Jew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Bonnie, I met her. I was at the Comedy Cellar. She came downstairs. And I knew of, okay, even before that.
Yeah.
Mark.
She was cute. Mark Cohen.
Mark Cohen.
They were dating.
Okay, so Mark Cohen, after he did Make Me Laugh, they did some live shows, right?
Yeah.
Some live. So a couple of them were me, Mark Cohen, and Joey Vega.
Right.
So we went and did corporate live, whatever. Yeah. So I'm working with Cohen, and he's miserable. He's fucking miserable. I go, what's up? Me and my girlfriend just broke up. This and that. I knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
We just broke up. He's heartbroken. He's fucked. I go, look, I've been through divorce. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You'll get through it.
Yeah.
You'll get through it. You know, but he's going through that right then. That,
yeah.
The fear of
abandonment. Well, horrible feeling.
Yeah.
Heartbreak.
And all that, like, just change. And
You
get comfortable being uncomfortable in these relationships.
Yeah.
So, and that's all 12-step talk that I didn't make up,
right.
But it's true. You get comfortable in uncomfortable situations.
Yeah, the patterns. Yeah.
So he's breaking up with her. Years later, I'm at the Comedy Cellar, ready to go on stage, and Bonnie walks down the stairs and says, oh, you're that guy in Last Comic.
Yeah.
And that was the first scene. And I'm looking at her, I'm going, oh, you're the comic that's gone out with other comics.
Everyone.
You know,
no, but not, she me, looks, not me.
But she looks hot. And she watched my set, and I kind of fucking, I didn't bomb, but it wasn't a good set.
Yeah.
She even left in the middle of it.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't good. Because I was too nervous.
Because of her?
Yes. I wanted to impress her. I was on a date, too, with a hairdresser from The View, who was very attractive.
Somehow or another, Bonnie just floored you.
Just came in.
Now you're gonna fail in front of two women.
And now Bonnie comes down the stairs, and my first thing I say to her is, she doesn't even know me. She goes, oh, you're on Last Comic.
Yeah.
I go, oh, yeah, I know you. I'd hit on you, but I'm on a date. That's the first thing I ever said to her.
Yeah.
So already she thinks I'm a creep.
Yeah.
So I call the club the next day. I ask Esty. I go, can you give me that girl's phone number? And Esty called Bonnie, and Bonnie said, do not give him my fucking phone number. Right? So I went down there. I went down another night.
He stalked her.
She was there.
Yeah.
So we went out for pizza.
Yeah.
We had pizza, and, cut to me going down on her in the car a little bit.
Yeah, a little.
And then she takes off.
So you went down on her in the car a little bit.
Yeah.
That was the first date. Like, that's unorthodox. That's what you went with? I'm going to go down on her I have to
show her that I'm a giver.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay.
I didn't ask her to go down on me. I want to show her, hey, look, I am a giver.
That's why she married you.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of comics guys would go, blow me. Not me.
No.
Okay. You set them up.
Yeah. Okay.
So
you're a real prince. Well, went down on her in a car.
Okay. Anyway, it was a Mercedes. It wasn't a crappy car. It was a nice car.
Back seat? So you got in the back?
No, the front. Oh. I like to crawl under the dashboard.
Okay.
I'm really good at doing that. So then I started dating a little. Uh-huh. Like when I come to LA, we'd fool around. She was great. She was perfect. I was in LA taping something.
Yeah.
I'm staying at a great hotel.
Yeah.
She came over in the day.
Yeah.
We went to the pool.
Yeah.
And we ended up going to my room. We had sex.
Uh-huh.
And she got up and left.
Yeah. And you, nope. That was so respectful. That was the best thing ever.
Are you crazy?
Yeah.
She left. And I walked her down to the car.
This sounds like love to me. Going out, down on her in a car. You fuck her after hanging out at a pool at a hotel and she leaves. You're like, I'm in love.
This is it. This is it.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. All right. So okay. Now these two incidents happen. Mm-hmm. And then you and Bonnie just start dating.
We start dating. And
what's the name of your podcast?
My Wife Hates Me.
Yeah.
My Wife Hates Me. And that's our radio show that we do on Tuesday nights on Sirius. And we did the pilot we did, that one was called My Wife Hates Me.
But now let's go back though, and then we'll bring it all back around. So the first time I met you was probably 1989, 1990 at Nick's.
Yes.
Comedy Stop. You had like long, like a mullety Jerry curl. Yeah, almost.
That's how my hair grew. It was long. I love Roger Daltrey, and I'm glad my hair grew like that.
Right, but he put stuff in it. There was goop in it.
No,
it looked a little oily to me.
It might have been. I was a greasy person.
Yeah, and then you wore one of those like those Italian horn necklaces with the little, you know, the little curly thing. You know, the thing.
There was no way I would possibly have a horn necklace. It was probably a chai. It was a chai. I mean,
you know the horn I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know the horn. I got, you know,
Jewish
star. Oh, you
got a Jewish star. Maybe a chai.
Yeah.
And you were, you know, you had the, it was the late 80s, so you yeah.
That's
yeah.
My grandfather's dog tag from World War One.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Isn't that cool?
Round dog tag.
Yeah, World War One.
So like, what? How long have you been doing comedy at that point? Because you were kind of, like at Nick's, I think
stunk.
Well, I don't know, you were doing sort of, you were, like, you were angry, you were tight. You know, you were intense.
Okay, when I worked Nick's, see, I think...
But you were kind of dicey.
I know, and that's what we got to get to at some point, because I heard the podcast where you had Dice on, and you said that you opened the door for comics like Voss and that. And I'm not at all. But I know what you're saying. It's an East Coast attitude that makes you feel it's dicey. And I was probably a little... Look, you don't find your voice for I don't know how long it takes you to really find your voice.
20 years?
I mean, I went on... Yeah, it took
20
me,
years.
It took me a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I went on... I remember in the beginning, I was running around. I thought I was Robin Williams. Then I would pace. I thought I was
but
Bill
Hicks.
But
when did you start?
I guess I'm 29 years sober, so I guess I've been doing it 32 years.
So you were... All right. So you were like 25, 26. Where'd you live?
In Jersey.
Where? In Jersey?
Yeah. In Plainfield.
That's where you grew up?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was... It was a predominantly black town neighborhood. I went to a school, you know, I grew up in a black neighborhood, you know, and then I mean,
both your parents are there?
No, divorced. Divorced from day one, since I was a little kid. That's why I loved, I'm going to talk about this later. I'm speaking at a rehab tonight,
yeah.
Someplace Promises.
Uh-huh.
I'm speaking there. And your whole life as a child is formed, you know, 2 and 3. And my parents got divorced. I guess I was in third grade, fourth grade. And I would come home from school every day and listen to Von Meter album.
The JFK one?
Yeah, the First Family.
Yeah.
And I laughed and I laughed and I laughed. And all I was doing was covering the pain from my parents' divorce.
Right.
And I didn't know that as a kid.
But would you have a relationship with both your parents though?
Now or throughout life? Nah, I mean, look, I broke the chain of dysfunction with my kids. My parents were fucked up when we were growing up.
What'd your mom do though?
My mom struggled. She had three kids. Luckily, you know.
You and two sisters?
A sister and a brother.
Older brother?
Younger brother passed away a year and a half ago.
Sorry.
And thank you. And my older sister, who's a very successful business, very, very successful.
You get along with her?
Kind of, yeah. I wasn't real close with my family because our parents didn't bring us close.
Yeah.
As a family. You know what I mean? Like, so there
everyone
was
off doing their own shit?
Yeah, there was no nucleus. There was nothing. It was just every man for himself.
And where was your dad?
He lived in New York or L.A.
What did he do?
Well, the second, after he divorced my mom, yeah. He married a lady and lived in Woodland Hills.
Yeah.
And then they got divorced. He moved back to New York, dated this one lady forever. Then he married his third wife, who he's been married to for 30 years.
Still alive?
Yeah, he's in his 80s. My mother's in a nursing home, Alzheimer's or dementia.
Yeah.
Shot out.
What'd your dad do?
He did everything. He was a scam. He did sales, whatever fucking right. scam. And then yeah. he ended up as a travel agent the last 20-something years. A big, you know, but not just flights, big right. vacations sure, and sure. stuff. Right. So, and so growing up.
You're wired at two, at one and two years.
Four or five.
Yeah, right.
You know, you don't have any foundation.
Yeah.
You know, I'm living in a neighborhood. My front door is white people.
Yeah.
My back door is black, all black people. So I didn't feel good enough to hang with the white people, even though I didn't realize that their lives are just as fucked up and dysfunctional.
Yeah.
But I felt a little better than the black people down there. You know what I was saying?
Right.
So that's where I drew there because I thought it was, I'd be accepted. Do you see what
I mean? In the black neighborhood.
Yeah, more yeah. accepted.
Yeah.
Because I was, right. But then we all ended up kind of hanging together anyhow. So that's where I was. And now you're at the point in life, growing up, you're doing everything for attention, but it's negative.
Right.
You know, my parents were fucked up. Like, my father would come see us every 2 or 3 weeks, yeah. you know? And then when he'd get there, my mom would have him arrested. She would use us as pawns. You know, here comes daddy, then out of the bushes, the detectives fucking arrest
Why,
him.
Why, for money?
For child support.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, well, who's more fucked up? Him not paying or her for using us as pawns? You
right.
know what I'm saying? And one time my mother took my sister, myself, and my brother to my grandmother's house on my father's side and just knocked on the door and said, I don't want him, take him. Now, as a fucking kid, that's abandonment.
Yeah.
When you hear your mother go, I don't want them, take them. Yeah. And it's because back then they didn't have the tools to say, hey, I want to go out tonight. Can you watch my kids?
She didn't mean permanently. She just meant.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, but you don't know that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
You don't know that. All you know is take these fucking kids.
Yeah.
You know, and just a couple words.
Right.
Could change the whole course of your mind and life.
I think that's probably true. But I mean, I think that recurrence of behavior, the patterns have to stick. You know, like, I mean, that probably hurt your feelings. But I mean, just the emotional patterns that are always there are what fucks you up.
Yeah, like, I mean, she set up my father a couple times. I remember one time from Jersey, we took the bus all the way to New York.
Yeah.
At the Port Authority, got out. My father was there. Then the cops arrested him. We had to fucking take the bus to New York. You had to put us on a bus, all of us, and take us to fight. You couldn't get him arrested halfway in Elizabeth or somewhere. What the fuck? It's an hour ride on the bus to see daddy. And you're so, you know, it was so fucked up because, and too, as a father, see, I broke the fucking chain of dysfunction with my kids. I was the complete opposite of my parents.
You were aware of that. That was part of your agenda was to do that.
We did some TV show. I don't know. I think it was Louis Anderson's show on the fucking pier, whatever.
Yeah.
And they needed baby pictures. Remember that? I think it was Comedy Central, whatever. They go, we need baby pictures of you. And I went to my father. He had two fucking pictures of me.
Yeah.
Two. Yeah. Growing up. Yeah. I have hundreds and hundreds of my kids. Hundreds.
Yeah, my dad was absent emotionally too, but not like as bad as that.
Yeah.
And but also, you're all excited to see your dad, and then he gets busted. You didn't know that he was going to get busted when he went to New York.
No, I wasn't in on the setup. I was a kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's funny too, as a parent back then, like I said, they didn't have the tools that we have
now. That's forgiving, which is good.
I remember he would come to my house. He would come to our house. And it just didn't fuck your head up. You know, I'd curse at my mother, whatever. So he'd walk in my room. He'd smack me for cursing my mother. Give me a lecture.
And this is a guy you never see that much.
Yeah. He tried to get it all in on one fucking visit.
Yeah.
Smack me, lecture me, take me out to eat, give me money for toys, goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, hey, thanks. Let's get it all in on that in 3 fucking hours. Yeah. You know, thank you. You know, whoa, no fucking problems here. Okay.
But when did you start, like, you know, like, what did you have to go through? So you're hanging out with the black kids and you're trying to figure out who you are in this world. Mm-hmm. When did you start using the drugs?
Well, then I started hanging with the hippies in school. We mixed it up. You know, back then it was...
I just didn't know who the fuck you were.
Well, no, you grow into different stages of your life.
Yeah. So the black stage ended young?
It ended probably around seventh grade after sports. A lot of it was revolved around sports.
You were a sports guy?
Yeah, we all... In the neighborhood, we played sports. We played other neighborhoods. Right. Basketball, football. But, you know, it was all sports.
Right.
You know, at that age, we weren't doing anything.
Right.
You know, we'd break windows or break into a house here and there, but we weren't real bad kids.
Yeah.
So it was based on sports. And
breaking into a house, pretty bad.
And we stole fucking sandwiches and Hot Wheels.
All right.
Okay.
No jewelry heist.
No.
Sandwiches and Hot Wheels.
We took Hot Wheels and made lunch.
Just things you could use. Nothing you could fence.
And then you move on. You go to junior high school and you start hanging with these other kids. But those kids, they're all potheads or smoking, getting high.
Yeah.
You know, you're going from one dysfunctional group to the next.
Yeah.
So, and that's, I knew who I was. I was a troubled person trying to get outside of myself and bury whatever pain, you know. And before it was with negative attention, now it's with getting high. You know, it started smoking pot, going to the parties, and next thing you know, I'm doing coke, and I'm trying to deal. I owe everybody in town money. I mean, I was
What year? When was this? Junior high school?
High school. Junior high was
borrowing
pot.
Money for drugs?
No, people would front me it. They would, you know, they'd give you.
Oh, you were gonna sell it?
A pound of coke.
Selling it?
Yeah, it, and then I fucking do all the profit. Or the coke. I remember. I mean, I did so many fucking scams with the coke.
So you're selling coke in high school?
No, that was out, right when I got out.
It's bags of it, pound of coke.
No, not a pound, not a pound.
I think I've seen a pound.
Not a pound. No, pounds of pot, but no pounds of coke.
Okay.
I'd be dead. I would be dealing with cartel. They'd kill me. You know, and I got out of school. I quit school.
Yeah. Quit high school?
Yeah. And I had a big...
Why'd you quit? That must have been a fucking horrible.
Because I never went to class. I just went there to party and socialize. I didn't.
What'd your fucking mom do when you quit school?
She didn't give a fuck.
No one gave a fuck.
No, what the fuck? I mean, I was.
Were you out of the house? Were you working?
I started I went to school until 12th grade.
Right.
And then I left. I just went to school to sell pot, and I know, but I didn't know.
You left in 12th grade.
Yeah, when they graduated, I was supposed to go back one more year, and I drove into the parking lot. And I said, "Get me the fuck out! I'm out."
Yeah,
and I was a pretty good carpenter.
Yeah,
and I worked for my grandfather who remodeled houses.
Yeah,
and I started my own business when I was 21, 22.
Carpeting?
Painting houses, basically.
Yeah,
and carpentry, roofing. Yeah. But when I was 22, I had 7 guys working for me.
Yeah,
I was a good businessman. I knew how.
Yeah,
you know, I had one of the biggest painting businesses in town, doing Victorian houses, beautiful 3-4 colors. I'd have 3 crews going, you know.
Yeah.
But I was a fuck up. I take the money, deposits, and buy coke and party.
Yeah.
You know, I knew how to sell. And
to get the gig.
To get the house. I would go in the winter.
Yeah.
I would go in the winter and I would line up all the houses for the spring.
Yeah.
And people would give me deposits in the winter, and I'd fucking blow it because I didn't have, you know, rent, partying.
Yeah.
Then it came time to paint our house, you know, I fucking say Benjamin Moore paint, but I pour like $4 paint into Benjamin Moore cans.
So you were cutting the paint too.
I was fucking, I was cutting the paint. cutting coke. But the business, I had a great, we did great work.
Yeah.
I mean, the funeral homes in town, and then it just fell apart because of drugs.
When did you meet your first wife?
After I got sober.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So the drugs escalated from partying, coke, then to I started comedy.
And where'd you start?
I booked a couple one-nighters.
What do you didn't do open mics? You didn't do nothing?
I went to, there was like one open mic, but then I realized if I book some one-nighters, I could host them and get on stage.
Right.
And make money at the same time.
So you book headliners?
Yeah, I booked some rooms in Jersey, and I had guys, Joe Bolster, Dennis Wolfberg, fucking Mulrooney came, right?
Yeah.
And he brings this opening act, and this opening act goes, I don't know if you know this, but I work Catch a Rising Star, okay? So you're lucky. I go, look, you're making fucking $60, shut up. And it was fucking Jenny.
Rich, right? Jenny?
Yeah. Mulrooney brought him as his over. I go, look, well, you're making 60 tonight. Like, I didn't know him.
Yeah.
You know, I had Jack Cohen, who was real energetic.
I remember him. He's a showrunner, I think. He's a writer.
Yeah, he was Tonight for Show. Tonight Show.
Yeah.
I had Max Alexander. I gave him his first paying
Tonight
gig.
Show.
I gave him, his first
Max Alexander?
His first paying gig. I had Rob Bartlett. I mean, big acts.
At that time.
Yes.
Because you're mentioning names I bet no one's ever heard of.
Yeah.
Max Alexander. What happened to that guy?
Huh?
I haven't seen him in a long time. He's got to be out here.
Well,
Rob Bartlett. Yeah. Where's Rob Bartlett?
Well, no, he does IMUS. He does radio.
Rob Bartlett.
He's been doing radio forever.
Yeah.
Nice guy. The nicest guy. I mean, Mike Langworthy, that are all Steve Scroven. All these guys became writers.
Yeah.
They became writers.
So you're pulling these New York guys and booking these rooms so you could do 10 minutes.
So I could host.
Yeah.
And then there was other guys that book rooms like me, like Phil Selman, Dennis Ross, all these guys.
Yeah.
Joey Novick.
Yeah.
So I would trade them work and they would give me work at their places.
So you could feature there.
Or host.
Right.
I would have them host my room and I host theirs. So now I'm starting to work, you know?
So it's like a one-nighter network.
Yeah, it was all one-nighters.
Yeah.
Bellazzo had them. Jerry Stanley had them, which
Throughout
Jersey.
But what kind of rooms? Bars? Hotels?
Bars that did comedy. Bars. But some of them were great.
Yeah.
Some of them were really good.
So you were a one-nighter booker.
I booked one-nighters. I got to make money on this. So I went into places. I go, look, do you want to run comedy here? I can get you to comics.
Yeah.
And we'll do Tuesday night.
So you were a guy, there was a time where people were like, you ever done Voss's room?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to be a comic.
People wanted to come. It was easy. You go from Jersey, just go to Jersey, drive in from New York. Like there was a whole network of gigs. Because they're not making a fortune running around club to club. Why not do a one-nighter in Jersey? So you're 25, 26 years old?
No, I got to be 28, I think.
Okay.
28, 29.
Yeah.
And then I just started working. Then I hooked up going on the road doing MC gigs.
Yeah.
Like for Sandy DiPerna, and I'd go to Lubbock, Texas.
DiPerna booked Charlie Goodnights.
And she booked Richmond downstairs.
Yeah, the Virginia, yeah.
Yeah, so I hooked up with her somehow. Then I hooked up in Texas. I did some Good Humor bars. I worked with Hicks like a couple times.
At the workshop or the comedy?
No, Good Humor bar in Lubbock, Texas.
Oh, okay.
And somewhere else.
Yeah, how was that?
It was amazing. We went into a 7-Eleven and something happened and his girlfriend was breaking up. Well, whatever happened to him in 7-Eleven, he went on stage the next night.
Yeah.
And did probably 10 minutes on this. And I'm watching him going, I'll never be this funny as long as I live.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how long he was doing comedy at the time.
Yeah.
His girlfriend.
Well, he was back in Texas, so he's probably in his 20s.
Right? Yeah, his girlfriend broke up with him.
Yeah.
He was miserable. It's a true story. He wanted to pick up a hooker or something. So we get in a cab. He goes, you want to ride with me? I go, okay. So we're in a cab, and the cab drivers took you to prostitutes in Lubbock.
Yeah.
They knew. So this is, he goes to the first place. The lady opens the door, looks at him, goes, you're too young, and slammed the door on him.
Right.
Gets back in the cab. The next place the cab driver takes him to, the lady opens the door, looks at him, goes, you're a cop, slams the door. And he does a whole bit on how even hookers won't fuck him, right?
Yeah.
And I'm watching this guy, and I'm just amazed at how good he is.
Yeah.
Back, you know, he was so far. People listen to him now, these comics, they go, oh, I don't see it. Well, guess what, you fucking idiot? It was 30 years ago, okay? Or 25 years ago.
He had a real clarity and a real, like, kind of, like, confidence to his delivery and a very, you know, poetic way of looking at things. And it, even when he was improvising, it was so well put together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just his cadence, way he
good
moved.
Rhythm. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was at Catch a Rising Star one night, and Brenner went on.
In New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And David Brenner
went
on.
What was this, the 80s?
Yeah, it had to be 80s. Early yeah. Brenner went on.
Yeah.
Killed. It was David Brenner in yeah. the prime.
Yeah.
So now Bill Hicks is next.
Yeah.
And he walks on stage and his opening line is, you know, growing up as a comic, I would see Robert Klein and David Brenner. And I'm thinking, if these fucking guys can do it, so can I.
Right.
That's right after Brenner. Then he's doing the whole Nancy Reagan anorexic cunt yeah. bit and yeah. all this stuff. People are flying out the door like they yelled fire.
Yeah.
Right? The girl that's going on next after him, Jetta Jones.
Yeah.
She's pacing. She's fucking a mess. So he gets off and Hicks, I swear to God, he comes up to me. He goes, what the fuck went wrong? He couldn't understand. He couldn't understand why he emptied the room yeah. in New York. But the funny thing is, too, like
he didn't know.
He emptied the room.
He had a hard time in New York. They didn't know yeah. what to do with him.
No. But it's so funny, just the business. And the whole business is in a nutshell, is what the one creative director said to him. This is he emptied a room and the creative director said, you could work here anytime. Yeah. Anytime you want, you could, because he's Bill Hicks.
Right.
And he's got that reputation. He's Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
You could work here anytime.
Right.
So, now I'm doing comedy. I got into Dangerfields.
Yeah.
Hiram got me into Dangerfields because I give him coke and yeah. party with him.
Yeah.
Well, first Heenan got me into the...
Dave Heenan?
Yeah, into the bitter end.
Oh my God, I haven't heard that name in a long
Dave
time.
Dave fucking Heenan. He does cruises.
Still alive?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave Heenan. He got me gigs at the bitter end in New York.
Uh-huh.
Then Hiram gave me on the Dangerfields, yeah. and so would Heenan. And then I never worked there.
Dark place.
Depressing.
Yeah. The it's improv. Depressing.
You know, I might have done
the improv was still like going. How yeah. how good a shape was it in?
It was cool. It was a cool room.
So it's the 80s.
Yeah. And when I did Knicks though, I was on drugs when I was doing Knicks.
You were?
Yeah, I was a coke addict. I would do coke with all those guys. I'd buy coke from that guy
in the
that
parking
they killed
lot?
The guy they killed up there. I don't want, you know, yeah. the Mike.
Yeah.
You know, I do drugs with I would stay at the Biltmore yeah. right behind, or the there was a crack hotel right behind the Comedy Connection.
Right.
And I'd go up there and I was fucking horrible. I mean, I got so many bad drug stories from Boston. I met a girl. I'll tell you this real. I met her at Plums. I'm doing a one night at Plums. I have all this money. I go, where can we get coke? She goes, I don't know. I go, I do. And we drove to New York from fucking Worcester. I fucking spent all my money. I got to drive her fucking back on Sunday and still finish my... I'm right by my house. I got to drive back to Boston. My nose starts bleeding, pouring out. We're trying to get heroin in fucking Hartford. We just want to get anything just to,
come down.
And I drop her off and I do one more night in Boston. No fucking money. And I drive home. My suitcase is closed in a fucking shopping bag. And I think I ended up going to rehab maybe a couple weeks after that.
What year would that be? 29 years sober.
86. So
I saw you were sober at Nick's, dude.
Was I sober?
Yeah, because I wasn't working until 88.
Okay, so then, yeah, because that's when you gave me the barbecue shirt.
Yeah, the red bones?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know. We kind of hit it off. I got along with you.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
seemed like, for some reason, there was a couple of people I hit it off yeah. with in Boston.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I
was like newly sober. How do you yeah. like that? And you're all tweaky.
I left out the whole Frankie Bastille, you know, all those
what
stories.
What about Bastille? I ran with that guy.
Well, because he would take young comics under his wings.
Right.
And then, but manipulate them yeah. as much as he could to get drug money.
Yeah.
Heroin money.
Yeah. I drove him once. I picked him up. He wrecked his car in Mystic, Connecticut yeah. or something. I picked him and Karen up. And I didn't even know what was going on. Drove them to the Lower East Side. He scored heroin, got yeah. back into my car, sweating. We went to Jimmy Tingle's house, not expecting us. And Frankie bangs on the door, says, I got to take a shower. Tingle, who's sober. I mean, I got Frankie's story.
Oh, so I mean, we took, I've told the story a million times. We were in New York. We're doing a one-nighter.
Yeah.
I'm driving.
Yeah.
We pick up this comic,
yeah.
do the gig. And on the way back, we're supposed to drop him at the improv. I go, hold on, we're going to make a couple stops.
Yeah.
So I drove up to Harlem.
Yeah.
Right. And fucking... You know, I'm buying crack.
Yeah.
You know, there's fucking guys running around with knives.
Smoking the crack.
I was
that
a
crack. That was a crack, yeah.
yeah. Or freebase, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And then so he's like, get me the fuck out of here. Get me, you know. And then, you know, it's just a little white kid from Arizona doing a one-nighter.
Yeah.
And then Frankie, after he dropped me off, we go one more stop, and we went to the Lower East Side, and Frankie got heroin. So now Frankie's in the backseat shooting dope.
Yeah.
He's fucking panicking.
Yeah.
He goes, can you please drop me off? And yeah, we're done. And it was Spade when he first came.
I just saw him last night.
Yeah, and when I saw it was him. Right. And when I saw him at the Cellar like maybe 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
He goes, you guys held me hostage. And he even remembered a gig we did. It was BF Packy's, a one-nighter for Gary Grant. So Frankie
terrified him.
He was just some little white kid doing props.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a prop. He did props.
Yeah. welcome to comedy.
Welcome to comedy. So we took him hostage.
Yeah.
And then I started running, you know, now I'm working, getting spots all over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fucking horrible headliner with energy.
Mm-hmm.
Just whatever it takes.
Trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I stink.
When I saw you, you weren't moving. Like you said, you went through a Hicks thing. It must have been before. When I saw you, the first time I saw you, you were smoking on stage in between jokes, and you were standing real still.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, why I made the Dice Association.
No, it's probably, I was probably in my deadpan
stuff. I think that was it.
I kind of... Because I liked writing deadpan jokes. I just didn't know how to deliver.
So funny, because so many people go through a deadpan thing. It's a control thing. Like, you know, you know what I mean? You know exactly what that tone is. You're just going to drop the shit.
Yeah, it's so...
Yeah, you don't have to get behind it at all, really.
It was so... If you're riding in a cab and the driver goes in reverse, does he owe you money?
You know? Yeah.
I bought a wood stove. I only got to use it once. You know?
Yeah.
They were so easy to write, too.
Yeah.
You know? And you thought you were Stephen Wright, but he was so fucking clever, you couldn't be Stephen Wright.
Right.
Because he was at another level.
Yeah.
You could be his... That kind of delivery, but you could never be... As brilliant as he was.
So you got sober. How long before you meet the woman and become your wife? The first
one? So this is... I was off on a Sunday night, and they had comedy night Sunday night at a place in called the Charter House or Gus, whatever, in Jersey. And I went to go just hang out with Paul Lyons and watch Paul Lyons work.
I remember him.
Nicest guy. He's out writing or doing whatever.
Wasn't he in a cult for a while or something?
Well, was he? Paul?
Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else.
I think he just came out like bisexual online, which doesn't mean
anything.
Maybe
that was the vibe I was getting. The closeted vibe.
But he did the best Barney Fife.
Okay.
He did the best Barney Fife out of. So I went to hang out, and there was a girl sitting at the end of the bar. She looked like Cheryl Teagues.
Uh-huh.
She was fucking so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I either bought her a drink or said, let's go out to breakfast. I took her to the diner. And then,
did you tell her you'd give her a head in the car?
No, this was... I wasn't... No, not with her.
You didn't have to... that's special.
Oh, wait. No. Let me back up real quick. Let me just back up real quick.
Go down on your car in the car after we eat eggs.
Wait, let me back up. When I got out of rehab, I had like 4 or 5 months sober. I was doing this other club, White House Station or something.
Yeah.
I met this girl, Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, you couldn't have been any better looking than this fucking girl.
Yeah.
Prom queen, head cheerleader,
Vala,
whatever they call it.
Valedictorian.
Valedictorian. I mean, everything.
Yeah.
She lived up in the hills. She had a built-in pool, a pool table. You know, this is like the fresh air fund to me. This is hitting lotto.
Yeah.
This fucking girl is smoking.
Yeah.
Out of her mind. Eating disorders.
Yeah.
Out of her mind.
Yeah.
Just complete crazy. And her history, I know why. I don't want to get into it, but she was out of her mind.
Yeah.
And I'm in this relationship 4 months sober, and I'm not supposed to be doing this.
Yeah.
But I've never had someone that's good looking.
I know. Yeah.
You know.
I married one.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But it was total insanity.
Yeah.
I mean, we fought. I was jealous. I still am in life. I still got to work on jealousy. It's a fucking horrible thing.
It is cancer.
It's distrust. It's distrust.
It's insecurity.
Yeah. Well, it's also too my mom.
But you're talking jealousy in relationships or jealousy in general?
Well, in general, I'm working on that.
Yeah.
That and in relationships, the distrust is what I got from my mom as a kid.
Yeah.
Doing what she did to us as kids.
Right.
But she did do the best she could for a single mom back in
I hear
the
you.
60s. Okay. So, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Just crazy. You know, we got in a big fight one day and she called a friend coming and she goes, I'm going to kill myself. Well, wait till your friend gets here because I'm not getting fucking blamed. Just insanity.
Always watching your back for this.
Yes.
You know?
I'm not going to jail.
Yeah. Can we get pictures of you doing it? So,
yeah.
Is there a video camera around?
So I got out of that.
Yeah.
I could not let go of this relationship in my head. You know, she was crazy, but I'm on my mind so mixed up. I did drugs for how many years?
But look, what do you mean it's mixed up? It's emotionally is what it is and where you come from. The crazier ones leave the most impact, and you can't. It's hard to let them go. I don't know how not to be with a crazy person. Yeah. I'm still working on it.
But when they leave, when you get out of that bad situation, you're going, why am I feeling worse?
Right.
Why am I feeling worse?
Well, you like the engagement.
Yeah. Being comfortable in uncomfortable situations, because that's what I grew up in,
right.
An uncomfortable life.
And if you don't have it, you'll make it
Yes. 100%. 100%. You will fucking twist things and fucking throw a monkey wrench into the perfect
thing
in life.
That's true, man.
You just do it.
Yeah.
You do it. And
I got to fight that every day.
Because how can I fucking sabotage this? I'm not good enough.
It's a weird way to look at sabotage, because it's not just sabotage. It's sort of like, how can I get back to my comfort zone of feeling like a fucking asshole and having chaos around me?
Yeah, because it's going too good. It's too smooth.
But it's what I'm used to. You're not comfortable with it. You've never experienced that as joy and that kind of shit. It's like, ugh. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's uncomfortable because, you don't know it.
Right.
You don't know it.
Right.
It's just like, if I walked on hot coals right now, that would be uncomfortable because I don't know it.
Right, but it's interesting to look at self-sabotage, because self-sabotage, you're always easy to blame yourself. Like, I'm going to fuck it up. But wait, the thing behind self-sabotage is like, I need to get back to what I'm used to.
Yeah, but it's not only that. It's let me do this so when they say no, it's because I made them say no.
Yeah, I have control of it.
I'm the reason they said no, not because of them, because of what they see, because they don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm talking mostly, right now I'm talking entertainment. They don't know.
Jobs.
They don't know.
Yeah, I
know.
Right.
Okay, so this is how I'm doing it my way.
Right.
Even if they tell me to do it their way, fuck them. They don't know.
I was just talking to my brother about this morning. Yeah. That's the way fucked up people parent themselves, is they say they stink. This might blow your mind, but I've talked about it with other people. When your parents are not present for you emotionally or otherwise, when you're a real little kid, you got to think your parents are the best because they're your parents.
Yes.
So if they're fucking up, the only person you can blame is yourself. You're like, and then you carry that with you. That's how you treat yourself.
That's your total center. Damn, right. Is that's your.
I fucked it all up.
Yeah. So you do it and you try to fight. Hey, how? Do not fuck yourself. I was in a meeting once with Bonnie, and she's just the same. She's fucked up in her head. She's got to be, as a comic. We're in this fucking meeting. You couldn't be any more. And white guy, the Asian guy, the black guy, and the lady, or whatever colors they were. But it was a mixture.
Executives,
exactly.
Talent.
And the first they said to Bonnie, "Where are you from?" The first line she says is, "My mom's pussy."
Uh-huh.
Okay, why would you say that? Okay, to these fucking squares, okay, that want to give us a deal or want to work with us, and that fucking meeting was out. But she's even worse. I mean, she's fucking worse. So that's why I love her, because she's so fucked up. Like, when we find the same victim together that we can attack as a team, it just brings us together, like the love.
The joy in your heart.
The joy in our hearts when we're going after the same person. When we're fucking in the car going, oh, this is, and we'll go, on our radio show, we'll attack some or a podcast, whatever. So let me try to get back to where I was
at. So you had the bad thing with the anorexic girl.
With the anorexic. Yeah. And I met my first wife, Kelly.
Cheryl Teague at the end of the bar.
Very nicest girl, but she had another one, great person, great mom now. I was just with her last week.
How old is that, your kid with her?
I have two, 24 and 22.
You have two kids with her and one with Bonnie?
Yeah.
Okay.
But she was married at 17 to her first husband.
That she have a kid work. With him?
Yeah.
So she's
I had a stepkid.
Okay, so that's...
She just got into wrong situations, and she, I guess, had codependent issues in life.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a therapist, but... Then we got married, had two kids. I'm working, doing fucking one-nighters, doing whatever I can.
You're staying sober, though. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm traveling. I did this fucking gig. I'm in now I'm doing road gigs. And I remember being in Florida. I drive down. I get there. The gig is, it's like there's puppets behind the curtain. It's a Chuck E. Cheese, right? This is fucking, and all I hear on the radio that week, and I think it's with her or one of my girlfriends, Colin Quinn and Mario Joyner are taping their HBO specials in Miami.
Yeah.
And I keep hearing that, and I'm like fucking want to blow my brains out because I'm doing a puppet house, you know, but I'm not as good as them. I'm not as good as a comic as they are.
Yeah.
You know, I'm scared they're going to do their shows and come in for pizza and see me. And so I do this fucking horrible gig. Then I do a gig in Homestead.
Yeah.
One Yahoo's. I fucking 45 minutes fucking bomb. Then the owner comes.
Yahoo's?
It was a bunch of Yahoo's. The owner comes up, big ex-cop, grabs my hand, holding my hand after, says to the audience, I think you were very rude to him. Apologize. He'll do another 20 minutes. I don't even have it. So that was a nightmare. Then I had to drive to Key Biscayne. Right? This is
true. Apologize. He'll do another 20.
So I'm in Key Biscayne. Yeah. I'm fucking at my breaking point. Some girl comes walking by the stage in hot pants with a wooden leg, and she starts heckling me. Like,
come on.
Who makes this up?
Right.
And I'm fucking losing. I attack her. I'm driving.
You attack her.
I mean, verbally, not physically. Yeah. From the stage. Yeah. I go, I'll beat you with your fucking bad leg or whatever. Yeah, I don't know what I said. It was 30 years, 20 years. I'm driving home back. And on the radio comes Homeward Bound by Simon and Garfunkel, and tears just come pouring down. Tears. I'm just fucking crying. Because.
All of it.
And I got these kids at home and a fucking house in a house in a blue collar area where people are driving by, do get out of the neighborhood.
Really?
Yes. It was right by Pennsylvania. It was real blue collar. The guy next door that lived next to me, his nephew had a big fucking swastika.
How'd you end up there?
The houses were cheap. It was towards Pennsylvania.
All
right. I don't fucking know. I follow my ex-wife. You know, I just didn't. I couldn't make a decision, a smart one, you know, a rational one. Because I still have the mind, maybe of a 20-year-old. Because what do I have? 4 years sober.
A lot to do in that early sobriety.
Yeah, I have 4 or 5 years sober. I meet somebody. I've never
owned
a house. You
have two kids right away.
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah. Yeah, they're the greatest, man. They are just the best
kids. How old now? 24 and what?
24 and 22. I went to my one daughter's graduation on Friday, and my other daughter graduated last year early. My 22-year-old graduated early. Dean's list, all the time. I mean, and she called me the other day. She moved down to Houston with her boyfriend. She quit her job at Macy's. She calls me the other day and says, I was offered a job, $50,000 a year. She's 22 in fucking Houston. That's worth $75,000 in New York.
Right.
You know, and whatever. And I'm so proud of my two daughters. They're good kids. They've never, ever seen me high. They've never seen me drunk. I used to take them to meetings when they were young because I had them in the day.
Yeah.
My life was my kids.
Right.
Okay.
So you got a good relationship with them.
Yeah. You know.
And with the ex-wife too?
Oh, yeah. When Bonnie and I got married, I moved close to my ex-wife. I moved 2 miles from her so I could be by my kids. I always lived close to my kids. And then my ex-wife got remarried to a Canadian, and I moved 2 miles from them. And then I got married to Bonnie. We had a kid.
She's Canadian.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
I know. We turned each other off to Americans, or we both went low budget. So, but my ex-wife used to babysit our daughter.
So that divorce was an acrimonious?
Yeah, because she was already divorced once. We didn't have anything, any money or anything. Yeah. So we did our own contract.
Yeah.
You know, we had it notarized or whatever.
I never hear that.
Yeah, well, we didn't have anything. Well, yeah. You've always done well.
Nah, that when I first divorced, I had nothing and I just gave it to her.
Yeah?
The second divorce was a disaster.
Well, your career, I've always admired your career because you always worked, you always had...
It was kind of scrambly. I mean, I got like TV gigs and stuff, but I was, you know, as a comic, I wasn't making a lot of money. And the first divorce... I wrote that book, but I made $30,000 for that first book. That's all I made. And, you know, and I gave it, like, whatever I had, I just gave to her and said, I'm sorry. And I entered that second thing with nothing.
Well, but now I don't want to bring up names. Was your first divorce, I didn't know, in your second divorce?
You knew Mishnah. Yeah, you didn't know Kim, no.
Oh, okay.
They're both all right now. I don't talk to Mishnah, obviously. There's no reason to. But the first one, I see her because she's my Jesus, she's my brother's first wife's best friend. And they have, you know, my brother has kids. Yeah. Whatever. I see her family things.
Yeah.
She's doing good. And I think Mishnah's doing good.
Well, and you didn't have kids, so you could easily break away.
Yeah.
I knew that for the rest of my life, I'll be dealing with my ex-wife. So I go,
Yeah.
I mean, in the beginning, I said things that I shouldn't have said. We had, you know.
Right.
You know, and I apologized to her. I go, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm fucking Gandhi. I right. made mistakes right. and I was sure. an asshole sure. too. You know, but
the bottom line was it didn't yeah. destroy the kids. Like you said, no. this is an important point was that, you know, you set out to do it differently yeah. than your parents.
But I also,
right?
100%. You're right.
And even 100%. In the divorce, you had a commitment to your children.
Yes.
And you didn't let even the divorce destroy that.
Not at all. My wife, I would have them in the day and then my wife would have them at night. And, you know, I'd spend Christmas Eve. I'd sleep there. We were back and forth, me and her, sexually and dating. Yeah. You know, she kept me on her insurance for 5 years. Then she said, look, we got to finalize this. You know, because yeah. we stayed separated for five yeah. years. But we did a lot with our kids together.
Right.
Or I have them. You know, and throughout this whole time, and I pass over this. When I was 21, I had a major anxiety attack. And I went to the hospital. But back then, they didn't know what anxiety was.
Yeah.
They gave you a fucking Thorazine, Haldol. Yeah. They thought you were nuts.
Right.
So, yeah, crazy shit. I mean, I thought I was losing my mind. And I have anxiety in life. Then when I was 40, I watched my kids every day.
Yeah.
They were out of the house in school. You know, they're yeah. in school now. Now I have the whole day. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
And I'm going, I'm 40 years old. My career sucks.
Yeah.
I have nothing going on. And the anxiety came back really bad.
Yeah.
And I was ready to quit comedy or... I didn't know what I was going to do.
Start painting again?
I didn't fucking know. I was just so scared.
I had that moment like 5 years ago where you're like, I can't get work. What are you going to do? Yeah.
It's horrendous. Insane. I go through that now. Yeah. Listen, I built up a pretty good fucking resume and I don't fail on stage, but there's some fucking cocksucking headliner that will do it for $1,200
yeah.
and go in. But a lot of these clubs aren't smart enough to figure, you know, what I want, I'm going to sell that many more tickets.
Right.
But that's besides the point because I'm a survivor. And you're a survivor.
Yeah.
You figured out a fucking way
yeah.
to do it on your own terms.
Yeah.
Everything I do, or we do, me and Bonnie, or we do several, we made our own movie. We made this movie. And it's a fucking hit. It's a hit on Netflix.
What's it called?
Women Aren't Funny. It, you know. I've done 4 CDs all myself.
Sure.
Okay. Our pilots, we write.
Yeah.
We come up with the ideas and I can't tell me production companies want to work with us. So you create your own fucking destiny. You don't let the business do it. That's why I used to love Dane and all those redneck guys yeah. and all that. I'm not, whatever they did on stage, I can't tell you because I yeah. never watched.
Right.
I couldn't tell you one joke from Dane and I couldn't tell you one joke from Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
But what they did that I respect is went around the business and created their own opportunities.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I feel that in life, as an entertainer, there's no ending to what you can do on your own. You know, I'm not going to let fucking the improvs fucking dictate.
I won't do them.
You know,
I won't do them.
It just, I would if they call me. They just won't call me. But, you know what I mean? But you're doing theaters. You get to do theaters now.
Yeah, it's just new. That's the new, yeah, that just happened. It's the first time.
But
it's great. I got no complaints occupationally.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be making a living.
You're doing this.
But you know, like I always see you, the one thing about you, you've always been a very decent guy.
Thank you.
But that's a lot to say. You know, we there's a lot of monsters in this business, but you're a sweet guy.
Thanks. Well, yeah.
I don't know how that's possible, but it's
well, true. Because you know what? In this business.
But innately, you're a sweet guy. You care about people. You know, you took care of your kids. You're always straight. You know what I mean? Like, you've got your demons or whatever, but,
yeah.
you know, the relationship with your daughters, now you have a new baby. What's that like? How old's that kid?
She's 7.
How's that going?
She's great. She's so funny. She's the fucking... She did this... Oh, you want to hear a funny story? We're in Amsterdam doing this festival.
Yeah.
So whatever, fucking the fly-by-night festival in there.
Yeah.
So me, Bonnie, and we brought Raina. And so I'm talking with Tom Rhodes.
Yeah.
And then Bonnie later says to me, I don't think Tom Rhodes likes me. I go, what the fuck? He's always talking to you. I just don't think he likes... Look, I've known Tom forever. Nah, he just doesn't like me. I don't think he likes me.
Yeah.
I go, well, you're wrong.
Yeah.
So later on that night, I had another gig and Bonnie and Raina went back to the hotel.
Yeah.
So Raina goes, all right, watch this, Bonnie. I'm Tom Rhodes.
Yeah.
And she goes, I'm Tom Richard, I love you. You're the greatest. You're the best. Hi, Bonnie. You are... She was doing Tom Rhodes fucking
ignoring her.
I ignore her. You are so funny. You're so good. Hello, Bonnie. And she kept, and it was so fucking
bit.
Funny.
She did a bit.
She writes bits. She's seven. She said to Bonnie, she said, you should go on stage with a cast on your arm, a cast on your leg, roll out in a wheelchair, and say to the people, you should feel sorry for me. I'm married.
She knows your shtick.
She's fucking, she's great. She's so much fun.
Yeah.
She's seven. I can't, you hold her and you kiss her and you play, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's just a fucking doll. Yeah. She really is. I don't have a lot of time for her, but, you know, Bonnie's raising her, you know, because I'm on the road trying to, you know.
Earn a living.
Yeah, Bonnie, she has a book deal. She's got so much fucking heat right now from this movie and, you know, she's just,
well, it's
she's
good
brilliant.
But you guys are good together. You're good. The relationship solid.
Yeah, we fight. We're two comics. You know.
But you're good.
Yes, we're good. Yeah, 10 years. We're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We work. We have our own separate careers. We do stuff together. We, you know, I have to work on jealousy issues. You know, I'm not. You know, resentment, anger, jealousy.
Like business or like dudes?
Both. Especially even business too. Like, you know.
It's hard when they do, you know, when they're doing better.
Well, she's getting
you.
All this heat. Yeah. I'm going, you know, we did a pilot.
Why can't we be more pimp like it and say like, that's right, baby. Bring the money home. Like, we got to be like, what about me?
No, I don't
what
want.
What the fuck is wrong with us?
I don't want the fucking money. I don't care about the money. Look, I have to have one fucking TV show before I quit this fucking business.
Yeah.
We did the pilot with True TV.
Yeah.
I go, this is getting picked up. There's a couple I've done.
So now we're back in Vegas. So you're at Brad Garrett.
No. But it didn't get picked up. But next thing you know, True TV's calling Bonnie to do a bunch of stuff. I'm going, what the fuck? Did they hate me?
But was this the pilot when you were about to do the weekend at Brad Garrett?
Yeah, that pilot.
That's the one they called and said it's not happening?
Yeah, we did one 10 years ago. We've done a bunch of... I've done... Whatever. You know the deal in this fucking business.
Sure.
It's so hard to get a show on TV.
Yeah.
It's so fucking hard.
Yeah.
So, she's so good with the kid. I'm bouncing all over the place, but she's great with our kid because she knows how to make crafts. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
She's a mom.
How's her mom? How the grandparents?
Well, my mom's
out. Your dad's out, right?
Yeah. No, my dad's still.
He sees the kid?
Yeah. You're
okay with your dad?
Yeah. He's a little bit of a narcissist. But, you know, he's in his 80s, so I try to bring the kid to New York as much as I can. It's not a lot, but he'll see the kid, yeah.
But you're okay with him?
Yeah, what am I, yeah.
You made amends?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. My mother's in a nursing home. I go, look, I love you. I'm sorry for, she doesn't, can't talk back.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know.
Right.
It's so hard. My sister's hanging on to resentment and anger more than I am.
Yeah.
But I realize... They did the best they could, I guess. Yeah. Or they just didn't know.
Right.
They didn't
know. Better. They didn't know.
They didn't know. They didn't do the best they could. You're right. I hate that fucking saying.
I do too.
You're right.
It took a long time.
Yeah. I hate that.
Because people used to say that. Like, I don't know if they did the best
they could. No, you're right.
I don't think they tried at all. I think they just took it for granted and they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, you're right. I don't always do the best I can. I could have the other day stayed home, but I went and played golf. I just played on the road. Yeah. So, you know,
like, the best you can say is like, look, they fed me. I survived.
Really? Yeah. Oh, here's
I had Snickers. A house.
Yeah, that's the best they could do. How about maybe a, you know, it's so fucking unbelievable. My daughter doesn't realize how much shit we do with her. Mm. My parents didn't do that.
Yeah.
We sit and play games with her. We've taken her to fucking Europe, Florida, here, there, all over.
Yeah.
She sees the world.
Yeah.
She sees comics.
How about your older kids? They get along with the kids?
Oh, they love her. My older kids are great. They love her. They're good kids. Yeah. You know, they'll come over. I mean, I do have to pay them when they babysit, but they're good kids.
Yeah.
You know, they're just good. I got, you know, they drink, they party like normal.
Right.
You know, they're not full-blown alcoholics or drunks like me.
Right.
I don't think they... do any type of drugs, I'm pretty sure. You know, they saw...
They you working so hard. Not, you know, yeah, right. They know, heard so it. They well, go either way, you know? Goes
yeah,
either way.
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason for addiction. No one knows.
So what are you doing out here?
So I came out here. I'm doing I'm supposed to work this weekend in a comedy club. So I came out early to, I always wanted to do this, yeah. You know, and do a couple spots. And then I'm going up to Ventura Comedy Club.
Yeah.
And doing that Friday, Saturday, yeah. Sunday.
I heard about that place. Supposed yeah. to be good.
Hopefully, as long hopefully, you know, I don't get there and the whole, because I'm doing a door deal, you know, and next thing, well, these were all Groupons. Yeah. You know, you do a fucking door deal and it's, you know, the door deals are, you're like, this is college night. Yeah, oh, no, yeah. This is military yeah, yeah. night.
So, what
this
is the deal? What's the door deal? $200.
No, it's whatever versus 50% of the door.
Yeah.
But if half the door came in on fucking Groupon and passes, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But I get to come out to California, hang out. I don't get out here that much.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm on the road or I'm in New York, you know.
So you can go speak tonight at a thing?
Yeah, I'm speaking at this...
at a rehab. Yeah, Promises, big rehab.
Is it? Yeah.
It's, well, I think I've heard of it. I've never been over there, but it's like I hear of it in people's stories.
Yeah.
And then, you got people you hang out with out here?
Oh, yeah, tons. You know, I play golf out here.
You do? You love golf.
Oh, fuck yeah. That's what... I can get 5 hours. I don't have to deal with anything. I'm out there for 4 hours.
People love it. I mean, I've talked to a few other people. Who do you play with?
Out here, I play with Court. This guy, Court McCarron.
I know Court, yeah.
He's great. Or I'll play with Dunkelman. I love playing with Dunkelman.
Yeah.
Because he's more miserable than me.
Yeah.
He's great playing with him.
He's miserable, but you don't know it. He's such a waspy dude.
Yeah, he can't get any whiter than that.
Yeah, he's something.
I'm sure
he's
a good player. He's like a scratch golf. He's like really good. It's unbelievable.
He looks like he should be good.
If he was that good in comedy,
yeah.
He'd be selling out theaters.
Do you play with Kirk Fox? You know Kirk?
I played with him once.
How's he?
I played with him once. He seemed like a cool guy.
Yeah, well, he's a golfer and tennis guy.
He's a tennis guy.
Yeah, you play Ray Romano?
No.
That's out of your pay grade?
No, I would play with him. You know, how are we going to...
Yeah.
I played, last time I was in town, I love this guy, Campanera.
Yeah, John Campanera. Yeah, great
from Chicago.
Guy. Funny guy.
Funny from Chicago.
Yeah.
I played with him a couple times.
Yeah.
He's funny, man.
Really funny.
I like him.
Yeah.
He's been funny
for a long time, too.
Fucking from day one, I met him. This guy was funny.
Yeah, 30 years already. He's got to be in it as long as you.
Yeah, you know, it's guys, and...
He's on the road all the time, right?
He's doing boats.
Is he?
Yeah, he's doing boats.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was talking to a certain... I remember doing a thing with Mendoza.
It's good to know that you'll never be able to do boats, right?
I can never do a boat. Well, one... I have
designed
anxiety.
Your act so you can't do it anywhere. No, nope. Fucking shitty comedy.
No, listen, I could be sparkling clean. I could do
no, my you can't.
Yes, I 100%. I could be. I won't be politically correct, but I could be sparkling clean.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been doing this 30 years. There's nothing I can't fucking do on stage.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can't do. Okay. I don't care if it's a black knife fight or a fucking Jewish bar mitzvah. I know how to fucking do it. I've done it.
Yeah.
I have 4 CDs. My last CD. Even though there wasn't much, I took all the crowd work out because I just want straight material. Because I've already accomplished crowd work.
Yeah.
I know I could do it.
It's a skill you need to have. It's a survival skill.
Yeah. And I could do it as well as any comic, pretty much. I mean, Brogan was good at it. Belzer was good at it.
Right.
Big J.
Yeah.
But I'd rather now just move on to...
Do material.
Yeah.
So what were you going to say about Dice?
The thing is, I was listening to one of your podcasts and...
When I talked to Dice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I associated you with...
Well, a lot of East Coast... You opened the door for like guys like Voss and...
Florentine.
I don't know if you said Florentine.
Maybe Norton.
Yeah. And people... Well, people used to say, you know, they would compare me to Slayton.
Yeah.
Not Dice, you know, because we did crowd work and we're both aggressive.
Slayton. Yeah.
He fucking called me. I owe this guy. He called me 2 weeks ago. He just out of nowhere. He goes, "Hey man, I thought of you. I got 2 tickets for Book of Mormon. I can't go tonight. Do you want them?" Fuck yeah. He gave me 2 tickets. You know,
to see the musical.
Yeah.
So who'd you go with, Bonnie?
Yeah, I took Bonnie. But it was right before Mother's Day, and I fucked up, and I should have said to Bonnie, "Guess what? I got you a Mother's Day present."
Yeah.
But then I let her know that Slayton gave it to us. And you know, Slayton.
You didn't fuck up.
Slayton is, you know, he's Bobby Slayton. He's got his own legendary...
But he's another guy. He's a sweetheart. Like you.
Yeah.
These guys, these venomous fucks. He's a doll. He's a fucking doll.
Yeah, so I compare to them, but you find who you are, you talk on stage. I talk, you know, I'll do some crowd work if it comes up. I'll talk about, you know, recovery. I'll talk about my kids. I talk whatever.
No, I know. But like, I think during at some point, the reason I made the association was because I felt that, that maybe you were going through a little bit of that.
Well, when you saw me back then, when we did that podcast,
you got
festival,
something against Dice?
Not at all. Okay. Oh yeah, no, I don't like him. Fuck him. Matter of fact, when we were at Florentine's wedding,
yeah.
He goes, comics, take a picture, all the comics. And yeah. Bonnie went to get in. He goes, no, just the guy comics.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Yeah. So then Bonnie did a joke, a Twitter joke.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, something on the New York Post at Dice's, but it was a joke.
Yeah.
Then Dice is on fucking O&A, trash and Bonnie, and Norton and Obi are going, no, you don't get her. She's being funny.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not a big fan. I have nothing. It's a different life. He doesn't live in my head rent free. I don't give a fuck about him.
Yeah.
He's a legend. Dice is a legend. He sold out Madison Square Garden. Right. He has done things in comedy that 99% of comics won't do.
Yeah.
So you cannot take that away from what he has done
in
this business.
But he was rude to your wife.
But he was rude. Okay. So that's a whole different level. That's a personal thing.
Sure.
As a comic, he has accomplished.
Right.
What I mean, I could only imagine selling out the Garden.
Right.
So, but if you're rude, like this comic last week or 2 weeks ago brought my wife on stage and said, you might recognize her from Two Girls in a Cup. Then I saw him the other night. I go, you don't introduce my wife that way. My wife has worked hard enough to build a little respect in this fucking business. Okay, you're not one of our close friends.
Yeah.
If Bobby Kelly said that, or Colin,
yeah.
or fucking Norton,
yeah.
you know. But you're, and I wasn't like gonna fight him or mean. I just said, look, she's earned enough respect. She's done three Lettermans, HBO Comedy Central, she's fucking made a movie. You know what I mean?
Treat her like a fucking comic.
Treat like a comic, not some fucking broad that, you know, she's done, you know. He goes, did I say that? Or you said it. Whatever.
You know what you said.
And Bonnie yells at me. Bonnie yells at me in the car, what the fuck are you saying? I go, you don't have to stick up. I go, yeah, I do, because I don't want fucking people. You know, you're brilliant. You're a genius. You're a great writer. I'm telling you, Mark, if you asked her to sit down and write a fucking script, she'd have one out in a week.
Yeah.
Brilliant writer. Brilliant director. But a little bit, she's not street smart.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she lets people take... you know, kind of, hey, can you help me with this? And she doesn't know how to say no.
Yeah.
She's a people pleaser at times. And I tell her, say no. Don't fucking do that.
Yeah.
Because they're just, she helped this one comic punch up a whole sitcom. She punched it up for him. He never even fucking thanked her. Never, you know, right back, you know, fuck these self-centered cocksuckers.
It's nice to hear, though. It's nice to hear that you have this respect and this love and you understand it. And, you know, it's nice. That's why she loves you.
You know, we get along. She's cool. It's fun to have somebody that gets it. You know what I mean? That just fucking.
You seem great, dude.
Thanks. She's fun. Look,
you're all right.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm all right.
All right.
You know, I mean, our podcast is fun. It's not this. This is fucking amazing. You get so many fucking. We don't get guests. We just do it in our living room.
Well, this is my garage. What do you want? Did you see the house?
Yeah, so I went there.
Yeah, your house is probably bigger than mine.
No, it isn't.
What are you talking about?
Well, I have a townhouse.
I have a two-bedroom house.
I'm in a townhouse.
How many bathrooms?
Two bathrooms.
All right, I got one bathroom.
Yeah. Guess what? You have one person.
Okay
I have three. Okay, I got 1,200 square feet. I have a townhouse. I got fucking neighbors. But I was walking to your bathroom, I saw what a obsessive compulsive jackass you are, because all your shirts were hung the same way, and they're all the same shirt. They're all the same fucking...
I know.
I that's what I do. Like, if I see one shirt I like, I have to buy every color of it.
Sure. Well, you know what's sad about that is, like, I didn't even buy them. I got them from Wardrobe. Like, I can't even do my own shopping. Like, the show at the end of the season, I'm like, can I take them? They're like, take them. I'm like, good. I don't have to buy anything. That closet, I built that for a girl, hoping that she cleaned the fucking, you know, put her shit in it.
Yeah.
She never did, and now she's gone, so I got this fucking closet. When I started dating the girl I'm with now, she saw that closet, thought I was gay. It's fucking.
Yeah, a guy shouldn't have that many closets full of clothes.
Exactly. With the, in that order, like categorized.
No, I do too. Yeah. I do. I got my. Everything's got to be in place. I feel like fucking Kathleen Bates from Misery.
It's the only thing we can control. It's so little we can control.
All my sneakers face the same way. It's just do not. I can tell. I can tell if my wife fucking takes one of my belts or moves my sneakers. I'm fucking out. This is no bullshit. I had a white tank top like this.
Yeah.
And it's not in my drawer.
Yeah.
I have ripped the house apart. I cannot let. Where the fuck is my white? Did you? Are you banging someone that left with my white fucking?
Right. You went there?
I'll go to the far furthest. Where is my cutoff? I had to buy another one.
Just white. Like it?
Yeah. Well, it's not even the same kind. That one I
what
love.
What happened to that one?
I can't find. I don't know. Did I take it on the road and leave it somewhere? I don't fucking know. All I know is it's not there. And
so few things we can control. It's so few.
When I was fucking
locked into it.
When I was 21.
Yeah.
I walked in. Smoking pot. I go into this ice cream parlor and I go, give me a cup of ice cream. You know, scoop of the.
Yeah.
So the girl behind the counter, 16, 17, out of high school, scoops me the ice cream, right? And then I'm like, whoa, I can't wait to eat. I'm so high. The lady, the owner, comes flying out of the back.
Yeah.
And you know those little taster spoons?
Yeah.
Takes out two spoonfuls full. Because it was two spoons, maybe 1 cent, one penny.
Right.
For 30 years, I went over my head what I would say to her if I went back into time. For 30 years, I could not let go of this. I'm going, like, how the fuck does somebody that owns a business take out two taster spoons? One, I'll never come back. If I ever go back into time, I would say to her, it's against the health code rules to do that.
Right.
And I'm never coming here again. I couldn't say it then. But why would
that? You know what's funny to me is that you've been working on that line for 30 years and that's all you got?
That's all I got. I said it. That's all I got out of it in 30 years of her living in my fucking head over the two things.
Such a reasonable line. You call her a fucking bitch or anything?
No, nothing. I'm just going, I'm never coming here again. That's all I came up with in fucking 30 years.
All right.
This is fun here. This was fun.
It was. It was good talking to you, man. Thanks
for
coming.
Thank you for having me.
What a sweet fucking guy, am I right? For all your WTF pod needs, go to WTFpod.com. Go to WTFpod.com/calendar to see those upcoming gigs I got in July in Boulder and in Denver. Get on the mailing list at WTFpod.com and I'll email you every week. I do that. I let you know what's going on if you don't know enough already by just listening to me now. So what have I got here? Here's what I got. I'm not a pedal guy, but people send me pedals. Earthquaker sends me pedals. And MXR, that's Jim Dunlap company. They got the Crybabies. They sent me the Crybaby Wah, but they asked me if I wanted something else. And I said, I'll take an MXR Distortion Plus. You know why? Because that's the only pedal I had in high school. And I was a shitty guitar player. And arguably, I'm still pretty shitty. But they sent me an MXR Distortion Plus, which was the pedal I had in high school. So this is an MXR Distortion Plus and a Telecaster, which was my exact setup in high school before I could play at all. And again, I'm not saying I'm a wizard, but listen to this thing. Oh boy, it's a lot of buzz. That's a Telecaster, I'm sorry. Chord Wonder. Boomer lives!